True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. We're about personalized style that fits your life. Made for real life moments. Maurice's.
Good. Brooke M. Haney. Is it Haney? Is that how you say your name?
That is.
Okay. Brooke M. Haney. Now, I was reading about you. I think I actually read something. It might have been like a People magazine article or something.
Yeah.
Was that what it was? Yeah.
It might have been Us Weekly.
Yeah. That could have confused that for sure.
Well, you get subscriptions to both. So.
I look at every day.
Right?
I check from top to bottom. But I said to our producer, I was like, we should get her on the show, and he did it. He got you on the show. So we're very excited to talk to you. We have so many questions, and one of my first questions here is I need to explain what you do, and then hopefully you can explain better. But you're an intimacy coordinator, which I think people have heard about. Personally, I did not start hearing about them until kind of the Me Too movement, and we started hearing about sex scenes in movies and how Hollywood movie sets have intimacy coordinators. Now, is that a fair description of what you do?
Well,
or what your title? What your title is?
Intimacy?
Yeah.
You coordinate? You're like a choreographer?
Yeah.
Like, listen here.
Yeah, that's
Gosling.
What I mean.
I think
be better.
Yeah, I am,
do better.
I am absolutely a choreographer of the fake sex that you see on TV.
That is quite a job.
So you do choreograph it. I mean, that's the way that it sounded in these things that we were reading. And my first question is this the position that has Hollywood had these positions for a long time? Or is this kind of a newer thing in the industry as people try and be more aware of consent and all those things and people's feelings and being uncomfortable on set? Is it a newer thing in Hollywood or has it always been around?
Yeah, it is a newer thing. There are a very few people who were doing it before the Me Too movement, very occasionally. I don't remember the person's name, but someone did it for a scene in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, I remember that scene with Margot sitting on the floor. How could I forget?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think someone did it in a season of Westworld.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But truly, it was the Me Too movement that made it a career. I think even those at those times, they weren't calling themselves intimacy coordinators. They were calling themselves like sexographers or something.
Okay.
I have to tell you, it's a cooler name.
Sexographer or coordinator?
Yeah, sexographer. So like, hey, turn around, sexographer's here. You're like, all right.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You just walk, the door opens, hit my music.
That's right. Yeah, we should have a theme song as we walk in.
Exactly. Everybody's like, damn, sexographer's here.
Well, there are those stories in Hollywood, and I obviously have no way of knowing if they're true. Some of them are rumors. Some of them may be reported. But in the past, that there are sex scenes, some of them famous sex scenes in movies, a lot of times involving famous actors. I mean, I hate to even use someone's name just in case it's not true, but I know that there have been at least rumors or accusations against some pretty big actors like Marlon Brando, that maybe there were some scenes where people felt uncomfortable. This has happened multiple times, enough that there are several stories, urban legends, whatever the case may be, about famous people being very uncomfortable in a scene that you watched and had no idea. You thought they were doing their job and they have no problem with it. You never would have thought that they left feeling violated, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, that can be particularly tricky if the scene happens to be about sexual violence, to be able to tell, like, is the actor in character or are they actually having a traumatic response?
Like the girl with the dragon tattoo when he, you know, if anyone's seen that movie, that's a kind of a violent scene. And that makes perfect sense that you're like, well, she seems upset, but she's supposed to seem upset, right?
Yeah, right. So that is part of why it's a really important job. Because, yes, the fun part is choreographing the intimacy, but also my job is to check in with the actors, find out their boundaries, make sure that we're taking care of everyone's boundaries. So there is a safety part of my job for sure.
Okay, real quick, because I just want to back up just a little bit.
Yeah.
You said intimacy coordinator starts somewhere around the Me Too movement. They're like, hey, we got to do a better job of this, which is good.
Yeah.
Before that, there's a couple times where it happened, but what did you do before that? And how did they contact you and be like, you're the intimacy coordinator?
You'd be like a great sexologist.
Yeah, how do they, what was your job? Were you a counselor or...
I was an actor, and I tended to be in scenes that involved intimacy or violence, and I was starting to teach at a college, and I wanted to do better for my students than had been done for me.
Okay.
For example, I have an up through an MFA in performance, and I had been taught all the ways to get to the point where you're like weeping, but nothing about how to get out of it, and one of intimacy professionals' jobs is closure practices. So I created the actor's warm down, which is one of the closure practices that we use. And that's the first thing that people started bringing me in. Originally in theater, they were bringing me in to work in theaters on really tough shows. And then I was fascinated by stories of intimacy, and I studied sex for a year, every day for a year. I read something or watched something or took a class or listened to a podcast all on sex and storytelling, and BDSM and kink, and people started bringing me in to choreograph scenes that had bondage. And then one day, a theater that I'd worked with a bunch said, will you be our intimacy director again? And I had to Google it, and it was shortly after it became a job. And then I transitioned to TV and film during the pandemic because theaters shut down.
Right.
And film and TV came back faster. But yeah, I mean, it's still very word of mouth. Most intimacy coordinators know each other.
I mean, you've got this book, The Intimacy Coordinator's Guidebook, and, so I kind of get the impression that you are the intimacy coordinator. Is that fair to say?
No.
No?
I would say there are a lot of people doing this work. That are really incredible. Alicia Rodas, for example, was the first intimacy coordinator for TV on The Deuce.
Okay.
Tonya Sina was writing about this in 2006, was making an argument for this career to exist. I think I am, you know, both of those people are friends of mine. I think I am doing this work a lot and very proud of my career, but I would not call myself the intimacy coordinator.
Well, I'm going to call you that because you've got the book.
Great.
And if you are an intimacy coordinator on a set, are these intimacy coordinators? I know you say you're an actor, and you talk about that, but are they SAG-AFTRA automatically if they become a real intimacy coordinator on set? They join the union?
No, there is no union for intimacy coordinators yet.
Oh.
So we actually work as a non-union, but primarily we do work on SAG-AFTRA sets.
Okay.
Though I've worked on some non-union projects.
Okay.
But SAG, in the most recent contract, when there was that big actor strike, one of the things that got put into the contract was that for scenes of simulated sex or nudity or on request of actor for other scenes, that producers had to make best efforts to hire an intimacy coordinator.
Wow.
So it's practically required now.
Okay. So
you're busy then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it work like, I don't really know much about Hollywood, obviously, but
you
say that in the sense of, just to get an idea before we get into what you actually do and what your day-to-day looks like, you know, is it almost like being an actor? Like, do you get a call from, like, Scorsese and he's like, hey, come out here.
We need one.
Yeah, we need an intimacy coordinator. I want to make sure you get along with Leo and Matt and, you know, whoever else is in here. And then do you, like, kind of audition for that? Or do they just call?
Sometimes there are interviews. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always like to meet with the director for sure, because I want to make sure that the way that I work is best for the way the director works.
Because
it really is about bringing the director's vision to life. And sometimes I do get to meet with the actors in advance as well to make sure that I'm right for them.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times it's a pretty quick process.
Well, you've got a book. I mean, I would be carrying the book around and say, I wrote the book on intimacy coordination.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally did. It seems like it would be a good thing to have on your resume. One of the things that I'm curious about, because I know nothing about Hollywood, is how have sex scenes changed over the years, how they film them. Now, obviously, we have intimacy coordinators, so that's a big change.
Yeah.
But there's always been all these rumors, even as a kid in a high school cafeteria, you're talking about, well, you know, when they have sex, they're actually wearing flesh-colored underwear, or it's somebody else's body, or whatever. I'm assuming that things have changed quite a bit beyond just having the intimacy coordinator there now, making sure people feel comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that costume departments were doing exactly what you said. They're like cutting apart a flesh-colored thong to be a modesty garment. And now there are companies that sell them. They sell them in a variety of skin tones with insertable barriers. So, for example, if it's just, a certain amount of nudity, someone might just wear a modesty garment over part of their body. But if it is simulated sex, there has to be a barrier between the actors.
Okay, so they both have a barrier. They have to both have a barrier on.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, there is much more accessible materials.
Right.
And I would say, because now it's someone's job, just like it's someone's job to choreograph fights or dances or get the lighting just right, I would say some of the things that we use are more well thought out, probably, because there's actually someone's job to think, how is this going to work in the frame? What's the best thing to use?
It's funny that you said that. You said just the way we choreograph fights and stunts and stuff. Yeah. And I know, look, I'm a 13-year-old boy trapped in a grown man's body, so I'm just an idiot. So excuse me. But the first thing I thought of is like, well, you're on a movie and it's Tom Cruise, like, look, we're good. I do my own stunts.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, I don't need the garments. I'm good. I mean, can both people wave you off?
If they both don't want an intimacy coordinator, they can wave off an intimacy coordinator, but they can't wave off the garments or the barriers.
They can. Okay. Because I thought, that would be cool if they did say, like, hey, we're going to do our own stunts and this is it. But then I also thought, well, there might be, like, now there's an odd pressure for everybody to do their own stunts. And if you're the one who's like, no, I want the barrier, then you would feel bullied into not having the barrier.
Right. Well,
totally. And even if someone wants to do their own stunts, they still have a stunt coordinator.
Oh, right.
They just don't have a stunt double.
True. Right. Okay.
Okay.
True. True. All right. Again, we're talking to Brooke Haney. She is the intimacy coordinator in Hollywood. She literally wrote the book about it. The book is called The Intimacy Coordinator's Guidebook. And I'm just guessing here, but if I think back on my 13-year-oldness, watching a nude scene like in The Terminator. I remember that. Linda Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I just imagine that in the 80s when they filmed the sex scene, James Cameron goes, okay, now you're going to get on top of him and you're going to be topless. We're going to show your breasts. I'm sure that much was discussed. But then when it comes to the rest of it and how much he's grabbing her boobs, if he grabs her boobs, he grabs her boobs three times, four times, that's I just assumed back then, kind of ad-libbed, right? And now they would need, you would say, hey, you're going to touch her boob once right here. She's okay with that. You're going to bring your hand down. Like, it's completely choreographed now.
Yeah, you're very right. There were always directors who had a really good knack for choreographing scenes, but very often back in the day, it was like the script says, and they kiss, or a steamy moment, and the actors figured out what that meant to them. And the really big downside, in my opinion, of that is then we're drawing on an actor's own experience. And so all of a sudden, it's not the characters anymore. I mean, the actors are still acting, they're still being characters, sure. But they're drawing from a limited amount of experience, where someone with my job has studied the various ways that people have sex and can be like, okay, how would this character have sex?
What's the most fun way?
A better story.
Is there a fun way? Like you say, you studied it over and over. Is there like a way where you're like, more people should do this? If they want to have fun, they should. Like, we don't, because everybody, you know, like Shakespeare is the star of their own movie. If we haven't studied sex like that, then we're, just when you said that, they're drawing on their own limited knowledge. We're all doing that, right?
Yeah.
So if we studied, is there a way like, you know, like, hey, is there just something that sticks out in your mind, like after years of studying sex forever, day to day, more people should do this. They should do this first, yeah. Or they should do this last, or everyone does this. Is there, like, I don't know.
I mean, I think more people should use toys.
Okay, see, that's an interesting thing, right?
Right. And I'm also wondering, because you said, like, when you're talking about, you gave examples of some early intimacy coordinators, that Margot Robbie scene in Wolf of Wall Street, because I think a lot of people are familiar with that. I imagined that Scorsese says, here's what's going to happen, Margot. You're going to sit down, you're going to be wearing this skirt, and then you're going to, you know, put your legs out like this. He's going to crawl over. Or is it that he said, now you guys are going to have this scene where she tries to seduce you, and then an intimacy coordinator says, here's how you're going to try and seduce him. Is that how it works now?
Yeah, I mean, earlier than that, I would meet with the director and be like, do you have an idea of what you want this to look like? And some directors are like, yeah, I know beat by beat what I want it to be, and I want you to translate it for me. Great. Some are like, here are some images that I had in mind. Great. I can work with images. Some are like, I want it to be funny. Can you please make it funny?
Right.
You know? So it's a variety. Or some, I work on a lot of queer intimacy. That's my specialty. And so I work on a lot of projects where people are like, I want it to be authentic.
Right.
Like, we're tired of seeing heterosexual sex on when it's really queer people.
Right.
So make that authentic.
Right.
So yeah, it depends. But a lot more now it's okay. And then, you know, we do the director's rehearsal, and then I step in and I help with the choreography.
Well, and I would think that part of what they're looking for, I mean, God forbid, is that it's actually sexy. I remember Gene Siskel would always talk about, he would always criticize if a sex scene was sexy or not. He would say, you know, this was great. It was very sexy. He was very open about that, you know, even back in the 80s. But then he would also criticize the next movie and say, you know, they did this and it's just not sexy at all. That was, and I always thought that was interesting. That was part of his, you know, criticism, was looking at, okay, are the sexy parts actually sexy? And I'm guessing as a coordinator, directors can say, hey, you should see what she does. Look at how sexy this scene was. And they go, oh, she's good at making a sex scene sexy. Isn't that really the ultimate goal most of the time?
I mean, I think it depends on the story. Because, you know, sometimes in a comedy, it's not necessarily sexy isn't the goal. It's laughter. But yeah, a lot of the time, the intimate scenes are about, like, two characters whose storyline we've been following, and we want to see them hot and bothered. And so, yeah, that's part of the job.
Right.
And often then I'm talking to people about their breath or where their gaze is, because things like that can tell a lot.
Sure. It really is like a fight scene. You're just doing move by move.
Yeah.
And I always assume that back in the 70s and 80s and even through the 90s, there's so many movies that were R-rated movies. It felt like if it was an R-rated movie, a woman was going to show her breasts. And, you know, it's felt obligatory, right? That, oh, it's R-rated. We're probably going to see breasts in this movie. And looking back, I'm sure a lot of those women would say, I wanted to be an actor. I got this huge opportunity. They say you're going to show your breasts. What am I going to say? No, right?
Right.
And I would assume that nowadays they're much more comfortable and in a better position with someone like you to say, I don't want to show my breasts. Use someone else's breasts. Or are there a lot of people that are like, no, I'm still totally fine with it. Show my breasts.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sure there's
I mean,
both,
that's
right?
The key. I always appreciate when directors bring me in really early in the process, if it's particularly if it's a new character. Let me help you write the casting call, because let's get someone who wants to do what you want them to do.
Right.
Let's not say, here's your big opportunity, and then say, oh, by the way, like, let's just say up front, this is exactly what it's going to require, which casting calls do, but you can be, you know, more or less explicit in that. And I think going more explicit is great, because then you get someone who's like, yeah, I want to do that.
Right.
And they're not stressed and worried about it. They're just working on their character.
Well, do you get a say with the director? Like, I'll go back to, I remember a lot of nude scenes or close to nude scenes. I remember that movie Closer with Natalie Portman. She was a stripper, and there's all this talk about, oh, she's going to do a nude scene. And then there wasn't a nude scene, but the rumor was, well, they filmed one, but the director decided not to use it, or Natalie decided not to use it. They didn't add anything. Are you part of that discussion too? Like, do we need this here? We filmed it. Does it add something, or should we just leave it on the cutting room floor? Are you part of that decision-making process?
Occasionally. Those are my favorite projects, when directors bring me in post-production to look through and work with the editor on piecing together the bits of the scene.
Everyone should come look at all the sex scenes we filmed. Have a look at them. Tell us what you think. I mean, that is a great job.
It's a great job. And, I mean, if you really think about it, film and TV are so much an editor's medium. Because you can shoot all this great stuff, but if it's not edited well, it's not going to look great.
Yeah.
Right, so you're able to look at it and be like, you know what? That's not realistic. Or do you get into arguments about, because I'm guessing, I don't know what all your qualifications are in Hollywood, with the exception of what we talked about, but again, we'll just say Scorsese. You're sitting next to Scorsese, and it's a sex scene, and you're like, well, you know, that doesn't look realistic. And then he's like, yeah, but it fits the camera shot well. Is there arguments about, like, what's more important, the realism or the camera shots of it? Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it does make sense as a question. Absolutely. Occasionally, I would say,
I didn't know if I was using all the right words. You know what I mean? Like, this guy has never seen a movie.
No, you're doing great.
Okay, good.
I would say I rarely argue with people, but yeah, we do get down to like time constraints. The TV and film business work runs really quickly. So there are times when I'm like, can we try once more this way? And they're like, we don't have time. It's like, okay, all right. Yeah. Ultimately, the director always has final say. And I'm just there to support their vision. So if the director really likes it one way, I'll let them know my opinion and I'll back my opinion up. But they get to decide.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I think, what I was reading in Us Weekly, and it had popped up other places because it's all salacious, it's exciting, is that you were discussing, there are things that an intimacy coordinator can do on set if someone does start to get aroused, if they have a physical response to a nude scene. Now, I'm just
which is what everybody wants to talk about, because how could you not?
I think, how could you? Because I got all these people staring at me.
I don't care if there's an entire world there. If Margot Robbie started trying to seduce me, it's working.
Right. It's just a different headspace.
Right?
You could be a porn star. Whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, porn stars can do it. I don't think I could do it with all those people.
I would be the first one to be like, I'm doing my own stunts, lady.
Right.
Well, I mean, truly, it actually doesn't come up that often, because it is a, you know, not a very sexy environment. Because, you know, there's people watching and lights and cameras in your face. But yeah, absolutely. If it does happen, you know, we just say, it's getting cold in here. Let's do some jumping jacks.
But how embarrassing is it for the guy? So, like, because say, you know, again, we're just making up names, whatever. I'm a big star and I'm supposed to be doing this thing and nobody ever gets aroused. And then you're like, well, I am. And then you're like, it's okay, let's do jumping jacks. I'm like, come on, man.
Right.
Standing here embarrassed because I'm not supposed to get aroused. Now I have a boner and everybody's doing jumping jacks because I can't not be attracted to this woman that I'm making out with, even though everyone knows I'm married to J-Lo. Like, what the... Like, just an awful situation for everybody.
Right. Word's going to get around that Ben was doing jumping
jacks. Right, and then the other lady's there. It's like, oh, you know, aren't you married to J-Lo? Like, oh, God, right? Like, it just feels like a...
It would
like
be embarrassing.
Sex in and of itself is something, you know, that probably shouldn't be awkward, but it is awkward. And then certainly, you said, it's not sexy because there's so many people around. It certainly, when an awkward situation happens, becomes even more awkward.
Sure. Sure. My friend Chelsea Pace, who is also a really amazing intimacy coordinator, she always says, it's going to be weird, make it less weird.
Right.
You know?
Right,
and so that's kind of a motto that I always think, like, yeah, if something happens, that might be very embarrassing for someone, so how can I make it as little embarrassing as possible, as unobvious as possible?
Right.
And, you know.
Can I give you a tip? I mean, you don't have to use it, but because since I'm guessing this usually is an issue with men, right? And they're getting aroused and people notice. Instead of the jumping jacks, when you know who you're going to be working with on set, maybe go to his Facebook, find some pictures of his grandmother, find some pictures of his mom, whatever, you know, grandma, mom, things like that. Have it ready on your phone.
Not his stepmom.
No. Definitely not his stepmom. But if it's his grandmother and you know it's his grandmother, have that picture ready on your phone and just go, here you go. I think, and then he doesn't have to do jumping jacks. If he's still got a problem after that, then we might have even bigger problems on this set to look forward to. Don't you think that would work?
I appreciate that tip. I'm going to write it down.
Good.
I'd
like to think that maybe someday that could happen. Now, one of the other things people were discussing in these articles is you've got a lot of these sex scenes, but occasionally you do have a sex scene between two people who are in a relationship. Maybe they're married and everyone knows they're in a relationship or that they're dating, or maybe everyone on set is just saying, hey, these two have been awfully close and we think they've been going out at night and we think that they've started some sort of a little fling. But if you're filming a movie with... Ryan Gosling and Eva Mendes, is that her name, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, okay, this is a couple. Do they say, we don't need the intimacy coordinator here because these two people are in a relationship?
Yeah, that is things that I've heard. And then I often come back with, like, that's fine. If you don't need me, that's great. However, it's still great if somebody else choreographs the story.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like, it's not just about them being comfortable with each other.
Right. I guess I was talking about barriers and all that stuff, but
yeah.
Yeah, what they're willing to do in their bedroom doesn't necessarily equal what they're willing to do.
That's a good point.
Right. Whoever wrote what was happening, this isn't how we normally act.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It might be even worse.
Yeah.
And to some degree, because now we're in a relationship, but like you said, there's sexual violence involved in it in the movie. And now, obviously, obviously not, but we don't. You know, masquerade like that at home. And now, you know, how do you not take that home?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's what closure practices are for. Absolutely. It's
what are closure practices? Can we role play me and you?
Sure. So some of them are physical and some of them are verbal.
Okay.
And so I might say to you, this is one of Chelsea Pace's exercises, actually. I might say to you, like, hey, as my character, I seduced you, made out with you.
I remember.
Slapped you across the face.
Mm-hmm.
As Brooke, the actor, I followed my choreography.
Mm-hmm.
I said my lines and I pursued my objectives.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, use your brain to delineate those two things.
Okay.
Some of them are more physical. There are actors that do a thing called tap in, tap out. I think Intimacy Directors International came up with it.
Oh, where I think I do that at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they literally like high five.
Oh,
I thought, like, they just tapped out.
Yeah. Give me, I need a break. I need some water.
All right. Back hurts. tap out. I'm done.
So even now with intimacy coordinators on set, which look, I don't think that you have to be, a super liberal, woke person, whatever, to understand that having someone on set asking people, hey, are you comfortable with this?
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense, and it should have been around for a long time. But now that you are there, and, you know, you don't have to give us specifics, obviously, but how often would you say you run into a case where someone says, I really don't want to do this, or they filmed it and they go, God, I really don't feel comfortable with that in the movie? Would they tell you that, or would they tell the director?
If it's been filmed, they are contractually obligated to allow it into the film.
Sure.
But they might still tell me, and there are plenty of directors who would be like, cool, let's redo that. But yes, I mean, if they're comfortable enough to just tell the director directly, I always encourage that, right? Like, I'm not here to take anyone's voice or be the voice of consent.
Yeah.
But I am often the person that they will go to. And they'll say, like, hey, I was willing to do this, but now I'm not. And here's what, you know, I don't ask why, but they might tell me why. And I'll just say, like, oh, great. I don't need to know why.
Sure. And I guess I'm asking if that's a common thing. Does that happen quite often?
No.
No, it doesn't. Okay.
I would say maybe one out of every 25 times.
Wow, okay.
Probably not even that common.
All right, so yeah. I have a question for you. You can just tell me you don't want to answer it.
Sure.
And then we'll play a little game of tap in, tap out.
Okay.
But no, I have a question for you. So you said when you did movies, and a lot of them had sexual violence in them.
Uh-huh.
And then you said, like, you started teaching classes about mm-hmm. these things to talk to people so that maybe they felt better about it mm-hmm. after they were in a movie that maybe had the same type of thing that you did.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question then is, like, was there no intimacy coordinator or anybody close to these things on the movies? And did it affect you in such a way, obviously, that you felt like that, like at that point there needed to be a change? Like, I need to stand up for this because it's damaged me in ways that, you know, I don't even know how all they're going to come out yet. And I need to stop this from happening to other people. And were there ramifications for the movies that you made?
You know, I think that there are people who do intimacy now where that is very much their story.
Mm-hmm.
That is not my story.
Okay.
I always loved those parts. I loved fighting. I loved being knocked around. I always felt very safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably lucked out and got the right directors and the right scene partners. I did have a scene partner step in once when a director was demonstrating a choke on me and actually choking me.
Okay.
So I had in that case had a great scene partner.
Do you have a safe word in those situations? I'm not trying to be funny. Are there safe words for people on set?
No. That's not a funny thing. Yes, there are now, and no, there weren't then.
Yeah. Okay.
And I personally wasn't traumatized, but I did when I was in undergrad. I worked for a company in Seattle called Open Door Theater that went into schools and taught sexual abuse prevention. We taught the difference between a good touch, a bad touch, a confusing touch, and how to talk about it.
Okay.
And I think because of that, very early in my career, I was very comfortable talking about boundaries.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
How old are those people when you were teaching that? Were they kids? Were they adults? Or
yeah, elementary and school, yeah. And middle school.
Yeah, because I was gonna say we had that when we were kids, and they come in, and
yeah.
You know, I'm sure it's evolved quite a bit since then.
Right.
But we did have that. So
I did have one question for you that I thought was interesting. You said you worked in theater.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? Like, when I think of Broadway, I've only mm-hmm. been to one Broadway play, and it was SpongeBob, so there was nothing that I noticed.
Yeah. Yep.
But what, movies seem to have that. I mean, is there a lot of sexual violence in Broadway theater?
There is a lot of sexual violence in theater. I don't know that a lot of Broadway theater has sexual violence. There's some.
Okay.
But there's certainly off-Broadway, I think, is a little more risky.
Sure. Okay, got it.
Sure. So,
maybe Vegas.
I'm just unfamiliar with it. It seemed like such a really hard thing to pull off.
That's what I was going to say. Is that
like, live theater seems like that would be, you know, sex scenes would be the hardest.
It's a lot trickier.
Because if you, what are you going to say, the safe word then, and you ruin the whole play?
Right, yeah. Like, and there is no way, like, I don't like this.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's so much pressure
there.
Well, I usually do a physical, like, not a safe word, but a safe touch, like a self-care cue, so that if someone needs something, they can, like, tap twice quickly on their partner's thigh or wherever makes sense in the scene, so their partner knows that, like, something's not going right.
Okay, got it.
If you think about it, those actors have to do it 8 shows a week
for
months. So it needs to be something, not that we just have to catch, you know, get that one great take. They have to make it repeatable, like, over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
It is more tricky, and it's that then the choreography is really specific.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, one of my questions. Again, we are talking to Brooke Haney. She's a intimacy coordinator for Hollywood, for movies and for theater. When you talk about choreographing these sex scenes, and again, I'm not really trying to be funny, but Do you look at something like pornography and see what they're doing and going, obviously they're actually having sex and we're going to simulate it on a Hollywood set. But do you look at things like that and look for something that you think, oh, if we could simulate that, that would be a sexy scene in a movie? Like, is that how do you do research, I guess, basically?
Yeah, I look at a lot of art.
Okay.
But yeah, I've watched some pornography. There's a company called Aorta Films that is a queer porn company that you have to subscribe to, and they have a lot of variety in body types. Mm-hmm. And I've found that's a great place to look if I'm working with someone, for example, an actor who's fat, or someone whose body is very different than what I might have worked with before, to see like, oh, how do those bodies move together?
That's interesting.
You know, different bodies fit together differently.
Right.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I mean,
it's gonna frame differently. I mean, even for the director, if I get naked, I know you can't see me, but I look like a frozen turkey at the grocery store with my shirt off. And I'm sure that they would go, okay, well, we're gonna have to do this a little differently. It's either gonna be a comedy, right? Or
and keep your shirt on.
You're gonna run through the quad, right? Or we're gonna have to find a different way to do this. Or also, I guess we could use a body double, which I wonder how often that mm-hmm. happens too. That they say, no, I'm a big enough star. Just use a body double.
I wonder how often that happens, too. I've never... Oh, that's not true. I just worked with a body double.
Oh, really?
I've only once worked with a body double.
Okay.
I worked with two body doubles on a film very recently. And
are you allowed to tell us who, or is that client, attorney?
Intimacy.
Like
client
privilege. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am on the SAG registry, which doesn't mean I'm a part... I am a part of SAG as an actor, but... Intimacy coordinators are not represented by SAG, but SAG does have a registry of qualified intimacy coordinators, and one of the rules for being on it is that you cannot talk about your projects.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got it.
Okay.
But I'm guessing at least those are big name stars. In order, like, you have to have a little bit of pull to be like, get the body double in here. Like, I'm guessing if I was, you know, it's my first movie, and they just picked me up, and they're like, hey, you're going to do this movie with Seth Rogen, and you're going to have sex with Jonah Hill. I'm like, get a body double. They're mm-hmm. like, you are the body double, dum-dum.
Right.
Like, okay.
It's funny because it's you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think probably you're not wrong, because it means the producers have to pay for a whole other person.
Well, so it sounds to me like on a Hollywood set in these sex scenes, we've got the boundaries, which have to cover their genitals mm-hmm. at all times, both people. But obviously there are exposed torsos, breasts, and guys take their shirts mm-hmm. off. Mm-hmm. But to me, it sounds like really the most intimate thing that happens in a movie is kissing, because you can't fake that. And now someone else could do the kiss, and they could frame it so that it's actually other people's lips, a lip
double. Yeah, but the kissing,
The kissing is real. And honestly, I would think if I were an actor, when if they say, okay, now here comes a scene, you're going to kiss her, make sure it's passionate, and there's a chance that we may have to do it more than once, I honestly think mm-hmm. that's when I could start to get, not uncomfortable in a bad way, just uncomfortable in an embarrassed way. Like, I might start to, need a break, need to tap out. You know what I mean?
Some jumping jacks.
That's an intimate thing. Kissing someone new is a very intimate thing, and they can't fake that.
Yeah. You can mask it. But it will look different. We did do a bit of masking during COVID.
Sure. Where they turn their heads and you don't actually see their lips. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
But when they show that close up, like Cruel Intentions or whatever it is, that's
right. Yeah.
That's
if you want to see lip on lip, you can't fake that.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think that is very, a very intimate thing.
Yeah.
And, we've talked about comfort a lot, and truthfully, I actually am not trying to necessarily make the actors comfortable. I'm trying to make them prepared.
Oh,
okay. There are plenty of reasons why an actor might be uncomfortable doing a thing and willing to do it.
Okay.
Well, the question then begs the closure stuff.
Yeah.
Because we hear, millions of times, this actor did this movie... I'm thinking of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie met on this mm-hmm. movie, and then all of a sudden they started dating afterwards and got divorced from their partners. And so mm-hmm. clearly there's some sort of connection
Absolutely.
On that film. And I would imagine that connection is kind of brought together by the script and then mm-hmm. spending time together and away from it. Like, all that stuff plays into it. But most of the time, I shouldn't say that, but of what I know in my limited scope of knowledge of reading people or whatever, those relationships don't always seem to last.
Mm-hmm.
So because they're kind of in this character and they've kissed this person for the first time, and we've all felt that when you've kissed mm-hmm. someone that you're attracted to, and now you've probably, it's work. So you've probably been flirting mm-hmm. a little bit on and off, and then you've got this script mm-hmm. that you're trying to get into, and you're in love with this person and they're in love with you, or, you've been flirting with them on stage and then probably off stage a little bit as well, too. Mm-hmm. And then you kiss, and now you're like, hey, we really love each other. I'm going to divorce Jennifer Aniston and leave my entire family and go date you. And then 6 months later, you're like, wait, we're not on a movie anymore, and I don't even know who you are. Is there closure for that where you're like, hey, guys, you probably don't really love each other?
Well, I mean, I think that's a therapist's job, that kind of closure.
Okay.
But I feel like it has to happen a lot, right?
It does.
I mean, you're saying it exactly. Like, the playwright or the screenwriter has given you all the right words.
Right.
The characters fall in love. Our bodies physiologically respond to endorphins and serotonin from, like, absolutely. It is science. There is science that backs up why people fall in love who've been on set together.
Yeah.
Part of my job is to make it work so that that can be just a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also not my job to police people's personal lives, so I don't get involved in that.
Okay.
But I guess, like, I totally get what you're saying, because I'm obviously not an actor, and other people might not think like me. But me personally, if I try to imagine putting myself in that situation, I just think that when it calls for that kissing scene, when, like you said, Leslie, we've been on set, we've been flirting, whatever, that when we kiss, even though the logical part of my brain knows this person is doing this for a movie and is getting paid to do this, there's this other part of your brain going, she must kind of like you. She's kissing you. You know, like, this is a connection now.
I mean, look, they've built industries on this. That's how strip clubs work.
Right.
Yeah. We go in there and the girl puts her hand on your thigh and says, oh, you're so funny. Logically, I know she doesn't think I'm funny, nor does she attracted to me, but somehow our brains kick in and we go, I think she digs me.
Right.
I'm going to go, I'm going to give her money, and then we're going to go back in this room, because our brains kick in and say, no. I felt the way she touched me, and she likes me. There's no way that can't happen on a movie set.
No, it absolutely does. And
absolutely.
I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but last month I read a book about The Princess Bride that the star of it, Carrie Hughes, wrote. And he's talking about being on that set with Robin Wright, right? And how the script basically called for, she was supposed to be the most beautiful woman in the world, the most beautiful woman anyone had seen. So Rob Reiner is going around looking for this person, finds Robin, brings her on set, and everyone is just enamored. And he says that they got along great. Everyone loved her. And of course, he basically admits in this book that it seemed, at least to me, in my interpretation, he's kind of falling in love with her. By the end of it, they have to do a kissing scene. And I thought it was interesting that basically Rob Reiner said, okay, we got the kiss, you're done. Normally you might do that more than one time, but as a director, he's like, if they keep kissing, you know, he's going to get the wrong idea. I got that impression. And he talks about how he still loves her to this day as if she's part of his family, because they worked on this together. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure part of it is because in the movie, in the script, you were in love, and at the end you kissed her, right?
Right.
And I just don't think that little sliver, that reptilian part of your brain, is ever going to totally shut up. You're always going to look at that person and go, she kissed me.
Right.
Like, no, she didn't, though, really, you know?
Right.
Yeah, truthfully, she didn't.
Right.
Her character kissed your character.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I guess I do have one more
question. It's interesting that we just say that, right? Because when we talked to you when we first started, we thought of intimacy as you need to put some sort of barrier between my boner and her.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now we've gotten to what really probably is real intimacy. And that's the sharing of emotions and kissing. So I want to puke when I say it.
Yeah.
But that's probably the most dangerous out of all of this, huh?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, if you're worried about falling in love with someone, absolutely. It's the eye contact. It's breathing together.
Yeah.
It's true intimacy, true vulnerability.
How could you not? Now, I know in your book, at the beginning of your book, you're talking about and we mentioned this earlier, the Me Too movement. And how the Me Too movement really got this to become kind of a standard in Hollywood, that there would be intimacy coordinators on set. And when you look back at the Me Too movement and things that changed, if someone asked me before this interview, like, name one great thing that came from the Me Too movement, I think intimacy coordinator comes to mind, honestly. Like, I can't believe they didn't have that before. And the truth is, they should probably have them on porn sets, right? But I guess that's a battle to fight later. But it's just kind of crazy.
You know what? It is a battle being fought right now, actually.
Really?
April Flores is an intimacy coordinator who works on porn sets.
Okay.
And she is one of the very first.
Really?
And it's, yeah, it's...
Did I have to say to her that...
Second book and,
They're like, look, she's not really stuck in the dryer, okay? And you got to quit pretending like she is.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, any performer should be allowed to have boundaries. So, yeah, yeah. I mean, right. And I think it's funny that the first intimacy coordinator was on The Deuce, which was a TV show about the porn industry.
Yeah,
right. It only makes sense that now there would be intimacy coordinators on actual porn sets.
Yeah. I have a question.
The porn companies that are trying to be ethical, yeah, are starting to hire them.
I have a question for you. Are there any male intimacy coordinators?
There are.
There are.
Really?
And
I would just think that.
No, that's a good question, yeah.
I think it's a harder job to do as a man because one of the big parts of the job is power dynamics, dealing with power dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way our society is set up, men are perceived to have more power than women.
Yeah.
And so if you're working on a scene that has women in it and a man is the one talking to her about her boundaries, it's not that that's not possible, but it is trickier.
Well, right. And in the overall, if we just talk about straight sex scenes, what percentage, when there is an issue, when someone does have something they're uncomfortable with, how often is that the man? Is it, you know, 10% of the time or is it 50% of the time? I just assume it's
yeah, I guess when we were talking about this whole time, I thought it's the woman. In my head, like in A Time to Kill, now picture she's white.
Right.
Right? In my head, I'm like, oh, now picture it's a man. Like, the guy never complained, right?
Well, actually, guys often have boundaries and are often really nervous to talk about them because of this perception that they should be up for anything.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so it's you would be surprised, I think, at how many times my conversations with guys start with them being like, I promise I'm not going to do anything wrong. And my saying, yeah. I'm not here to prevent you from doing something wrong. I'm here to hear what your boundaries are.
And is it usually something about...
make sure we take care of you.
He's like, I'm doing my own stunts, baby.
Right. Is it usually something about showing their body, a part of their body that they don't want to show?
It can be that. It can be a particular position that they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like, everyone has... It's very individual.
Yeah.
I have learned to never go into a meeting with assumptions because I am often surprised by what someone's boundary is, and that's great. We should all get to have our own unique boundaries
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason.
Absolutely.
I always just tell them their boundaries are perfect wherever they are, and they don't have to justify them. Just tell me what they are. I can tell the story around your boundaries. I just need to know what they are.
Well, Brooke, it sounds like an awesome job.
Do you also do that on your first date with people?
Right. You do wonder about your personal right. life, but yeah. I didn't want to ask.
So you're just at Olive Garden. You're like, look, your boundaries are fine. They can be whatever they are. You need to tell me, and I'm going to go ahead and work around them.
And we're going to choreograph.
I'm going to work around every one of your boundaries. Trust me. I'm not going straight through them, but I will work around them.
I will work around your boundaries. Yeah, I mean, I think consent in a relationship leads to the best sex. Like, if you know what's okay, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
So
absolutely. People should do this in their real life.
I know your job is probably difficult, and there's a lot of stress involved, but... you understand why we all think it sounds like such a great job, and it's crazy that it didn't exist before. And I think you go with this, Brooke. You are the intimacy coordinator for mm-hmm. Hollywood. You literally wrote the book, The Intimacy Coordinator's Guidebook, and you know you can. I think someone's got to take that title. It should be
why
you.
Not you?
That's you, and they
Absolutely.
Come to you. So if there's anything else, though, I know we talked about the book a little bit. If there's anything else that you'd like to promote or whatever, please let us know. Do you have social media that you use? Is there places people can find you?
My website's brookmhaney.com, and my Instagram is at brookmhaney. And I will say I have a second book coming out next year that's the history of intimacy in entertainment.
Oh.
So keep a lookout for that.
So that will talk about some of those things that I discussed at the beginning of this conversation, maybe some of those issues that they talked about, infamous issues that happened on set.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
All right.
Well, Brooke, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And when the next book comes out, give us a call.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on. This was a really fun conversation.
Okay. See you later.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye.
And that is it. Thank you so much for listening. Toxic and Problematic is brought to you by Mitra 9 Kratom and Kava. Visit Mitra-9.com and use promo code PROBLEMATIC for 25% off your order. Thank you to Direct Computer Outlet in Mission, Kansas for making our Twitch stream possible. Music graciously provided by Kid Computer. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky, but Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Shop Blinds.com Labor Day Mega Sale happening now. Save up to 50% site-wide plus a free measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.